Yeah, live the culture anthem.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah, live the culture anthem. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, what's up, y'all? It's your boy Ejosiah Kenty, CEO of Flip the Culture. What's up, y'all? It's your boy Ejosiah Kenty. Lock in, bro. Man, my voice gone and everything, y'all. Man, by this time, if y'all don't get it, man, I done failed. You know what I'm saying? But Flip the Culture, well, the culture won't change until we do. We have Flip the Culture podcast, man. We got a special guest with us today, and her name is Kaylin Williams, man. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Hey.
I know this seat is mainly set in by athletes.
Mm.
So as an artist, I am honored to be invited.
But look, though, at Flip the Culture, we believe that you're an athlete forever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I know a little bit of your background. You know, we grew up together. You know, East Lake Park. You know,
yeah.
We was out there. So you say you played soccer. You played cheerleader because cheerleading is a sport.
It is.
You know,
a sport.
I my eyes were open when I went to a cheerleading competition, man, and I was like, I ain't gonna be able to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for a while that I thought that's what I was gonna be when I grew up.
Why you
I
cheating?
Thought I was gonna be a Dallas Cowgirl cheerleader.
Mm.
That's what I thought.
Dang, so like what made you pivot from that?
I think I just learned that I love performing. It wasn't cheerleading that I loved. It was just the performative aspects of it all. And once I got into theater, then I kind of understood that was the root of my love for cheerleading.
Yeah. So what age were you when you made that decision to change?
Most of my life was spent at a football field,
mm-hmm.
having two professional athlete brothers from there being 4 years old and up. So I didn't start to think about what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be until maybe like fifth grade.
Wow.
Because I was so invested into everything they had going on.
Let's talk about that because especially inside of our culture, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not only talking about the subculture of just black culture, right? But I'm talking about the South. Football is heavily emphasized, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for a kid to grow up and, you know, and you say, hey, I don't want to play football. It's okay, all right, what about basketball?
Yeah.
Hello, okay, what about cheerleading?
Yeah.
It's a soccer. Baby, come on, don't, like, stay with me, please.
You got to play some type of sports. And I agree, especially in Alabama, this is a football state. And it's crazy that we don't have an NFL team, how much we just go hard for college football and just sports in general. But I think parents that put their kids in sports, they understand that sports provide transferable skills.
Yeah.
Like discipline, time management, teamwork, collaboration.
Yeah.
And these are all the things that you talk about in overtime.
Right.
And so even if kids, it's a very small percentage of kids that actually go to a professional level with the sports. So the vast majority that don't, I think that's what your brand is all about. Mm-hmm. How do you take those transferable skills and apply them to something else?
Mm. Let's talk about that. So, you know, you separated from the sports world in that realm.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're going to get into what you're doing now and everything. But at a young age, you separated from that, still engaged, supporting your family and everything. But when you got into the theatrical space, right, you're doing what you're supposed to do. How did those lessons during that translate into your life?
Yeah, so I think it was the same for me. Growing up, being in a sports environment, my granddad is an Olympic track runner. So sports kind of just run in our family. And I was able to apply those same things to the art.
Mm.
There are lots of artists that don't know how to profit from their art. And I had the unique capability of knowing how to do that by using transferable skills that came from being in a sports family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you learn to take something that you're passionate about and profit from it. And that's what I've been able to do, not only with theater, but in the music realm and just anything that has to do with some form of media or art.
Okay. Man, that's amazing. And I appreciate you for still being present because, like, coming from a sports-oriented family, there could have been some tough conversations, right? There could have been some looks like, hey, your brother's doing this, like, why you ain't, you know what I'm saying? So I appreciate you for staying the course because every profession that people step into, you're always serving people.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like you're owning your space. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now to still be engaged with the athletic space, but you're doing it in your own way.
Yeah, so I'm the owner of All Eyes on You Branding. We're a Birmingham-based full-service advertising agency, and we service college students that are working with NIL. Mm. So that's pretty much how I spend most of my time in terms of the sports lane. Before I started my agency 9 years ago, I worked in an agency in Memphis, mm-hmm. and one of my accounts was the Memphis Grizzlies.
Okay.
So I was one of the first, people on his campaign team, mm-hmm. when Ja Morant was the face of Memphis, yeah. Grizzlies.
Yeah.
And I really helped kick that campaign off in terms of telling his story. And we were able to draw a lot of people, not only to the city of Memphis, but to the stadium, to the FedEx Forum, because they were in love with Ja Morant.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't care about basketball. They weren't basketball fans.
Wow,
but
man.
We created this persona, this character that people got attached to and fell in love with. And the rest was history.
But hold on, we're finna bring history to today.
Let's talk
about it, because when you were talking, I was like, okay, like, I'm glad you're in this seat, because athletes get so caught up with what they're doing now inside the sport, right? Mm-hmm. But then they go into life and think they can do anything they want to do, and it doesn't matter, right? It does. So I want you to talk about a lot of it.
Okay.
When it comes to the name, image, and likeness, and how you guys were able to create a story or create a character to support what people saw on the basketball arena.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Social media was a big part of that.
Okay.
Now, once I left the agency, y'all already knew what happened.
Yeah.
Athlete got in control of his own image. And everything went left because he doesn't have the skills and the know-how to know what not to post.
Right.
So you have, I'm glad that they started the NIL, because mm-hmm. now you can teach students at a younger age how everything you post is not just representative of you, it's representative of the brand that you are part of. And so for us, social media was the way that we were able to tell Ja Morant's story about his family, about his upbringing, his college journey. Ja Morant loves rap music.
Yeah.
So in that era, the Grizzlies came to us and said, hey, how can we connect basketball and music? Because that is the Memphis brand.
Yeah.
When you think about Memphis, that and barbecue, that's what you think about.
Yeah.
So that was the first time where you saw Lil Baby and Ja Morant on a Nike commercial together.
Yeah.
You saw Moneybagg Yo performing at halftime. And so there was this hip-hop culture that we were able to marry with basketball in the right way,
right,
that works when you had people in the room that understood the concept.
That is amazing, bro. That's amazing. Because I'm even thinking about now, you're talking about the professional athlete where name, image, and likeness is still, like, it's not just a college, term, right?
Yeah.
You have to consider, what is your name? What is your image being? And are you likable, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody's going to follow a person that's not likable, right?
Yeah.
And I can think of, you know, players right now that's not likable on the court, but it's because they're a different person than they are on the field. I mean, like, in regular life. And I know you can attest to that with actors. Like, there's some people that be in them, you know, them Tyler Perry movies.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't like them.
Yeah. I think the number one key, there's something called a likability factor.
Okay. Talk to me.
When it comes to branding. All of my clients, I look for what that is in them. And I think the common factor between the athletes that I've worked with, whether it's at the professional level or the college level, I think what they all have in common is kindness. People like kind people.
Right.
And so when you can show up as somebody who's kind, whether that's you serving your community, whether you serving your family, I think that's what people get attached to.
Right. And there's a concept that we say at Flip the Culture where you can say you see the same event at the same time, but you come out with a different perspective, right? So it's like we can be on this podcast right now and say something, and 500 people look at it, and it's like every 500 person has a different perspective of what we said, but they saw the same thing at the same time, but it's just a different meaning, yeah. right? So when you look at, and not to say any players' names, but let's just say John Doe mm-hmm. does something on social media, and it goes against what All Eyes on You branding is trying to, you know, put them towards, right? They made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And now the image is being tarnished by people's perspectives, and their likeness is not, you know, it's not acceptable, right? What do you do in those moments to kind of, like, correct what has been trying to be tarnished?
So that's what we consider public relations.
Okay.
And what I tell my team is this is PR, not the ER. Because sometimes
say that one more time.
This is PR, not the ER.
Okay.
So sometimes when you're in a crisis management situation mm-hmm. like that, it can feel like the ER.
Yeah.
Because you just want to get your client's image back to the way that you had it. Mm. But a lot of times, you just got to let time run its course.
Yeah.
And there's another saying in media, all press is good press.
Mm.
So even if they're talking about the client and it's from a negative perspective, when
yeah.
we look at the numbers, the engagement rate is going up.
Mm-hmm.
So it might not be time for us to address the scandal. It might be time for us to come out with a new product.
Mm.
Because you have everybody's attention now, whether it
yeah.
was good or bad.
Okay. That's good. It's a numbers game. I mm-hmm. like that. I like that. So with cheerleading and marketing, right?
Yeah.
You married those together. Even soccer. Let's put soccer in there. Because you played soccer at Ramsey, right?
I did. I did.
What was our record?
Ciao.
Don't do it. It's
I don't
right.
know.
I know the record.
You do?
I was being facetious, man.
I don't know. I don't remember. For me, sports was all about looking cute, hanging out with my friends, and just being a part of something bigger than myself. I don't think I took it as serious as my brothers do.
Yeah.
Like, one of my brothers, Cameron Thomas, he's in the NCAA. He's the starting punt return at UTEP. And then my other brother, Starling Thomas, he is in the NFL. He's a starting cornerback at the Arizona Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
So they live, sleep, and breathe football.
Yeah.
They wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they go to sleep at 7 o'clock at night. And everything in between has something to do with football.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was never like that about sports, but I was always like that about art.
Right.
And so I think anything that you are passionate about, if you can do it all day and
mm-hmm.
not get tired of it, even
wow.
in the hard times, that's your mission. That's your
yeah.
purpose in life. And so people may look at, oh, I'm just an athlete. Like, this is just a sport that I play. But I think some of the things you touch on in your book is, now that you have this arena of thousands of people paying attention to you,
mm-hmm.
or you have this social media platform of people, millions of people, what do you say?
Yeah.
How do you show up? What's the message that you spread?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think your book is a great place for people to start when they're trying to figure it out.
Okay. I like that. I appreciate that, man. Look,
it is.
Doing your whole work, man.
It's a good book. Well, you're one of my clients. You know what I'm saying? He up here asking
yeah.
these questions as
yeah.
if he's not one of my case studies.
I mean, when you ask questions, you get information.
You get
you
information.
So, yeah,
so before EJ came out with his book, we had to have a come together moment
mm-hmm.
where we had to talk about how do you apply some of the things that you've learned as a
Facts.
Professional athlete and turn it into a mentorship program
mm-hmm.
or turn it in and package it up
yeah.
into a product.
Yeah. And I appreciate that too, because I mean, I had a vision of a book, you know what I'm saying, like 5 years ago, right? And then once you accomplish something, it's like, okay, what's the playbook for it to be like, you know, multiplied in different streams, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's not going to read a book, right? So it's like, okay, podcast, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's amplify other people's stories. If I were to take out my story inside of Overtime, the principles would still stand regardless of whose story was going to be inside the book, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thought process I had behind it. And with all you, All Eyes on You, Brandon, they came in and you guys came in making sure that I was prepared to be able to put it in these different streams.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this one thing I always say is that, you know, you got to be good ground. Right. So it's like a conversation that happened, what, a year ago. Right. You might be able to see the fruit now because those things were inside of the process of being fine tuned. But the seed was planted back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate you for stepping in and doing that.
Yeah.
Because it helped me a lot.
Yeah, you were preparing the table, mm-hmm. and all you needed was servants to help you serve up the food.
Yeah.
You had done the background work and investment in yourself, and so the only thing that we had to do was come in and listen. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like a lot of times we had consultations where most of my time was spent just listening to you dream out loud and writing it down and coming back to you with a formulaic plan mm-hmm. of how you can execute these in bite-sized quarters of the year and different setting different milestones. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's been the biggest, I think, thing that we do for athletes is help them get their vision out of their heads mm-hmm. onto paper and then execute it. Similar to how you do in any sport. Mm-hmm. You got to come up with a game plan, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, and you were a coach, right? Yeah. You turned into my coach because the biggest disparity that athletes deal with is not knowing where to go. Yeah. Like, you have all this ability, but you don't see a playbook. You don't see lines attached to where you say your purpose is, right? And mm-hmm. you don't know which way to go and put all this these assets into the world. So, like, that's what you do. You coach athletes, and not just athletes, but you coach more people, right, in different lanes. But since it is a, you know, an athletic podcast, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you coach athletes in a way that we can understand. And, y'all, she's not going to sugarcoat this junk with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it ain't the, you know, everything's going to be okay. Heck no, that ain't going to be all right. Like, why'd you schedule this consultation and you don't know your target audience? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was certain things that I knew I had to have in line before I stepped to you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I know she's going to ask this question. Let me at least have this.
Yeah.
Let me at least have a formulated vision. You know what I'm saying? Let me at least put things in a package that I knew you'll be able to digest it and do something with it.
Yeah, because you had documents, you had rough drafts, you had plans. Mm-hmm. You had real plans. And only thing that you needed was a partner and somebody to share your vision with you. Mm-hmm. And so I was definitely glad to see you come from this to actually now having a hard copy.
Yeah.
I was just in Alicia's Coffee the other day
and
saw your book.
You said that.
I was like, y'all selling that book because I'm trying to buy one. They don't even know. You know, they don't even know. So when I see you out just doing your thing, even with the mentoring. Mm-hmm. I want to publicly thank you for coming to speak to the kids at the annual Starling Thomas Community Day because I think that's a, like you said, another medium for mm-hmm. the messaging that you're putting in this in this written aspect. Mm-hmm. So I love that you're walking the walk.
Yeah.
You're not just teaching athletes how to create their own brand and how to mm-hmm. profit from what they've learned in sports, mm-hmm. but you're actually doing it yourself.
Yeah. You want to switch seats?
What? I was asking her which side was my good side. She said both of them.
See that? Because what you're trying to do, you're trying to take over this show. That's what you're trying to do, because I appreciate it, but we here for you.
Okay, back to me.
All right. So we're getting back to you. All right. You balance entrepreneurship and also mentorship. Right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what it is, or coaching ship. Like, whatever you want to say for what you do. What daily habits and structure help you maintain groundedness while leading professionally and personally?
Holistic wellness. Mm. So for me, as a servant, that's the calling that God has on my life, mm-hmm. is to serve my community. And the way I serve my community is through the arts. Whether that be a commercial, whether that be a video, whether mm-hmm. that be live theater or music. That's the way I bring people together as a shepherd. And it can be a lot of pouring out. So for me, what's most important is looking at how I serve myself mm-hmm. on a daily basis. My coach, even coaches need coach, my coach, Serena N. Williams, shout out to Serena. She taught me about the theory of holistic wellness.
Gotcha.
Which is basically looking at your life on a pie chart where you have your physical, spiritual, mental, relational, emotional health. And you have different tactics that serve each one of those buckets mm-hmm. of your wellness. And I try to make space every day for that in my life. So for my relational, I'm going to talk to one of my family members on the phone mm-hmm. every day, every single day, at least one. For my spiritual, I start my day with a daily devotional I listen to gospel music all throughout my day and praise and worship, and I end my night like that as well. Mm-hmm. My physical health. I try to go to the gym at least 3 times a week. Right now, I'm not eating any sugar, y'all. It's hard.
Yeah.
But I had to make that sacrifice for my physical health. My mental health. I have a therapist. I go to counseling once a month. Mm-hmm. And then my emotional health. I try to learn, especially as a woman, when we are wired in emotions, I try to learn how to communicate my emotions effectively in a way that helps me advocate for myself. So I find that every day when I put myself first and I serve myself, that it puts me in a better position to serve other people.
That's good. Oh, damn, that's good. That's good. So in my upcoming TEDx talk, well, TEDx Alabaster, matter of fact, hold on, we're about to cut that.
Okay.
I said it the right way.
Okay.
All right. In my upcoming TEDx Alabaster talk, I'm going to talk about the psychology of athletes don't disappear. It just needs a new arena.
Mm.
Okay. So inside of your expertise in storytelling and also brand strategy, how can athletes and their families, right? You're an expert and a family member.
Mm-hmm.
How can they prepare athletes? And how can they prepare themselves on that transition outside the sport? Because that's one thing that nobody can run away from is the transition, right? So how can we start developing a healthy transition for these athletes?
Yeah. I think what's so important is the coach, like you said. Mm. Your coach has to be someone who's capable of teaching you creative storytelling exercises.
Gotcha.
And one thing that I see as a challenge for some athletes is their ability to communicate verbally.
Mm.
So much of athleticism, I see y'all. Y'all have different hand motions.
Yeah.
Like, y'all, that's how y'all got different stuff that y'all do. I don't know, but y'all could be doing like this, and it means go to the left, cut right, and tackle.
Yeah.
But those same things don't apply in the real world. Mm. So who in your life as an athlete is teaching you public speaking skills?
Yeah.
Who's teaching you empathy? Mm. Who's teaching you how to verbally communicate your story and your brand? So I think that is the most important investment that an athlete can make to help them with their transition. Because while the same transferable skills apply in real life, there is a certain level of verbal communication that you have to acquire that is not innate to most athletes.
It sounds like you're advising them to or suggesting them to build a new team around them.
Yeah, I mean, every athlete should have a team. I will say that one thing that I admired about Starling's journey at UAB is that they gave him a lot of opportunities to stand up in front of people and speak.
That's good.
And that helped him. I can remember one instance. There's every year UAB plays a game in collaboration with Children's Hospital. And each of the athletes wear one of the patient's name on their jersey. And it's a very emotionally appealing moment for the audience. And one of the players that my brothers was representing, he was a cancer patient at Children's.
Mm-hmm.
The team, knowing my brother had a personal connection to cancer because our mom had cancer, they allowed him and gave him a platform to be able to speak during the halftime video and to go on the news and tell the story of how he was playing for someone else.
Yeah.
And I think that those type of instances, the more young athletes can put themselves in that situation where they're telling why they're playing the sport that they're playing or who they're playing the sport for, that's the type of engagement that prepares them for the next level when Gatorade or Nike reaches out to you.
Yeah. And that's good. Like, man, that's good. Because I grew up in a dang, I sound old, bro. Man.
We're the new aunties and uncles. Auntie Nell.
Like, you know, when I was playing ball, right? When I was playing ball, we didn't have NIL, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have endorsement deals from, you know, college, in the college space.
Yeah.
But there were certain opportunities that I got from a football playing athlete where I know my peers that didn't play sports never got.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I was inside of spaces where they would need a football player to speak up, right?
Yeah.
Coach would reach out and be like, hey, like, we got this certain thing. We need 5 football players to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact, I know athletes that stay in the locker room is like, man, I ain't going to that.
Yeah.
Like, I ain't doing that, bro. That's John Lane. You know, I'm just here to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally look at their life now, and they struggle with what you're talking about, their opportunity to be able to speak mm-hmm. and communicate their story. And with me being an educator, not inside the classroom space anymore, but from me being an education realm, interacting with students, our literacy skills are low.
Yes.
Right? So it's like, man, you're emphasized with being an athlete, and you're put on this pedestal where it's like, okay, you could just play ball, and the teacher's like, oh, you know what? Hey, win on Friday, baby. You know what I'm saying? Then you get to college, and then there's this new expectation there because the professors don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't care. Depending on where you go. You know what I'm saying? Some people got a little extra pool.
You
got
a pass to play. No pass, no play.
No pass, no play. But, like, when you see that interaction, right, and we say, like, okay, coaches put them in this position, right, or we say mama and daddy put them in that position, but, you know, mama and daddy may be working, you know what I'm saying, overtime and stuff like that. How can we as a community, right, because we always say it takes a village, but we usually talk about it in a behavioral sense.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, it takes a community, it takes a village, and then you see somebody doing something wrong in the neighborhood, and be like, hey, no, boy, don't do that. What about our academic prowess, mm-hmm. right? How can the community come together inside of a literacy aspect to be able to provide supports for these athletes?
That's a great question. I think the schools have to invest in third-party programs like yours.
Mm.
Bringing in a coach or a mentor who has had the same experience as these students, they come from the same community as these students, to come in and teach them social emotional intelligence. And that's what this book is about. You are teaching soft skills and life skills. And athletes, I just, even outside of the athlete realm, schools, especially public schools, have to invest more in teaching life skills.
Yeah.
Because it's great to know geometry and history, but what about finance?
Mm-hmm.
What about public speaking?
Yeah.
What about all of these things that even if you come and be a corporate person or a blue-collar person, there are going to be times in your life where you have to master the art of persuasion in order to get somebody to do what you want them to do, whether it's in a professional or a personal setting. And I think if we start to invest more in our youth at a younger age and make them empathetic communicators, then I think we'll see a reduction in violence. I think we'll see it improve in mental health, and I think it'll just be up from there.
You know, when you said the word persuasion, in my mind, I went back to the 48 Laws of Power.
Yeah.
Right? Persuasion. But I think there's a thin line between persuasion and manipulation.
And manipulation.
Right? So, like, what's that thin line?
The thin line between persuasion and manipulation is whether it's mutually beneficial or not. If I'm trying to manipulate you, it's just beneficial for me.
Okay.
If I'm trying to persuade you, I'm going to be telling you how this is going to work for both of us. And I think that is the cornerstone of marketing and advertising, is learning how to be a good listener. People who aren't good listeners aren't good persuaders, because you're going to respond to whatever this person said to you with an I statement. And you're trying to empathize or show that you care, but that really is just showing that you're not actively listening on a deep level.
Mm-hmm.
And so what coaches and consultants have a vast training in is listening. Because when you listen to someone actively, you can identify the things that they need and you can respond to them in a way that shows them how you can serve them in the areas they need help in. And they walk away from that conversation like, wow, that person actually listened to me. I actually like that person, instead of you trying to manipulate them and push onto them services and opportunities that they probably don't care about.
That's good. That's good. And for athletes, this is where you start pulling on your character, right? This is your character. This is your hidden motives. You know, how upfront can you be with somebody that you need something from, yeah. right? And if you need something from them, once you get that, how can you make sure that that benefit multiplies other people? Mm-hmm. That's one thing I always put in my mind. It's like, okay, man, I'm not being blessed for myself. I'm being blessed for the people that won't be able to be inside these spaces and obtain what I am graced to be able to obtain. Yeah. You know, so we have to do a heart check before we go inside of situations like that, because I feel like that goes into the heart of the individual that's looking to get something, right? It's like that's the thin line for me, is, you know, between manipulation and perspective. So I appreciate that perspective, persuasion. I appreciate
that. As athletes, when y'all are going out and you're searching for an agent, you're searching for this person to help you get to the next level in your professional career, I think, one, you should, if you're God-fearing, your number one thing you should be looking for is someone else that's God-fearing. Because if that if they have that characteristic, then you won't have a lot of problems. And then, two, you just need to find someone who listens to you.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. Someone who listens to you on a deep level can actually help you.
That's good. And you said something powerful, which is listening and mm-hmm. also helping. So mm-hmm. I know you have a nurturing type of spirit on you. So, you know, when your life has been turned from caring to a calling, mm-hmm. right? Because there's different, like, you can care all the time. Like, you're like, oh, man, you know what? I care, right? Yeah. I care about this homeless person. You know, I give them $5. And be like, yeah, I'm praying for you. But the calling, opening up a center mm-hmm. to house homeless people and feed them 3 hot meals. You know what I'm saying? Give them a cut. So, you know, from turning that care into calling, when it talks about being a nurturer of your business and also for your family, what are some soft skills that you've obtained over the years that you're using actively now?
Well, we already talked about listening.
Yep.
We already talked about public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So you wrap those in a bow, and that's just your communication.
Mm.
So I have a journalism and strategic media degree with a concentration in advertising.
Yeah.
So essentially, I'm a professional communicator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being able, there's a reason why communication and community are spelled yeah. almost the same.
Yeah.
And I think that that's how you take your care to your calling. Because care is just an internal emotion, and your calling is you physically acting out what you care about.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of that physical manifestation of your passion is to be able to communicate about it effectively. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been my greatest strength in terms of sports advertising, being able to help other people learn how to tell their story in a way that gets people to do what they want them to do, whether yeah. it's come to a game, buy a ticket, buy my t-shirt, come mm-hmm. to my event, come to my sports camp. There has to be some level of emotional appeal mm-hmm. that comes with creative storytelling.
All right, so you talk about, well, I say the way that you are talking and communicating, that speaks volume, right? And one thing, when people talk about athletes, I feel like they go to almost a male type of, like, picture, right? Yeah. Unless you're actually in that space. So just talk to the young ladies.
Yeah.
Okay? You are confident. I'm not even going to say you seem confident. You are. You demand the space when you walk inside the rooms. You demand respect. Right. How did you get to this point? Like, when you talk about stepping away from athletics and everything like that, that transition, even transition to middle school, which is treacherous, right? Then you go to high school and then you go to college. Life happens, yeah. right? How do you keep your demeanor and your composure to be able to operate inside of these spaces?
I think theater has definitely helped me with my confidence.
Mm.
Because it taught me at a very young age how to show up in front of an audience and not be scared.
Dang.
And I started doing that at the same time my brothers were putting on their first football pads.
Mm-hmm.
I was joining the church choir and being the Easter speech and a welcome person at church. And I had a mother that was in school. She was a teacher. Mm. My mom was a teacher. So she was a professional communicator as well.
Yeah.
And so while the other kids were able to get up there with their Easter speech on the paper, and he rose, I was up there spreading the gospel.
Yeah.
I was ready. I was ready because I had a mom who sat in the living room and made me stand up in front of her and gave me pointers and say, no, when you speak like this. You speak with your hands, or you don't speak with your hands. You raise your voice on this sentence and then you calm it back down. Mm-hmm. Or you speak very slowly. So I had a mother that taught me how to walk in heels.
Mm-hmm.
That's important, especially for athletes, if that's your brand and you want to have that type of image, that walk. That's the most, like, in terms of your brand deal, when you come out of that locker room and they snap that picture of you. Mm-hmm. Everybody know the picture I'm talking about.
Straight up,
when you come out and you walk into the field or you walk into the court and that whatever you have on, that's your moment to get that picture that makes Fashion Nova say, I got to put her in my clothes next time she walks out the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Or even your social media, the way you posed. I had a mother that put me in pageants as a young age.
Wow.
So I learned how to walk across the stage, how to speak in an interview, how to wear a ball gown, how to move with grace. And so I can accredit my confidence to the investments that my mom made in me at a young age and put me in a performative environment.
That's good. And you listened.
Yeah.
And you also applied.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to learn. Just listen. And then try it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just try it, bro. Like, little Johnny, you try sagging in school, bro. And you get rolled up every time, bro. You know what I'm saying? Just try pulling your pants up this time.
Yeah.
Like,
I can say, like, me and you, we went to middle school together.
Yeah.
And both of us always were presentable.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell the kids who parents ain't play with them.
Facts.
Our parents were always friends because they could tell that they both had the same values when it came to us. And, you know, our younger siblings being, like, the same age and kind of growing up together as well. Yeah. I think your mom and my mom have a lot of similar characteristics in the way that they invested in our image as a young age to now where we're not under their wing anymore and we still hold on to those same characteristics. Like, we don't come out of the house any type of way because you never know who you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And or you never know who might see you that you don't even know watching.
Facts.
And so we just kind of grew up in a house, in two households with parents that instilled us to take pride in who we are and take pride in how we represent our family unit.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that you and I don't do or won't do, or a lot of places that we won't go because we know that, hey, I got two professional athletes as brothers. I just can't get caught on TMZ messing up the family brand. That ain't going to be me.
Yeah.
Your mother is an author. She's a serial entrepreneur. Your dad and his media professional. There are certain things that you understand. You don't walk out the door with your name is not the only one that's across your chest. You wear that last name, Kenty, and it means something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as parents, I don't have kids. We don't have kids. But as young adults, I think investing in your kid at a young age and teaching them to have pride in themselves is what builds a confident adult.
And it's good to find something to have pride in. Because, you know, you may have the athlete like, man, nah, I don't come from nothing. My mama cussed me out every day. You know what I'm saying? Grandmama don't want nothing to do with me. So this football thing, this basketball thing, this chilling thing, all I got, right, that I'm holding my hat on. So it's like, take pride in that, bro. Like, find a team and, like, would your team be disappointed in the way that you're acting right now? Like, let your teacher be your team. Like, somebody that cares and gives a darn about you. Like, we can find reasons on why to act up.
Mm-hmm.
And we can find reasons to act right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's all about where you want your life to go down. What route do you want to go down? And I feel like that's something that we've you know, been able to do by looking at where we want to go. Because just as easy as we had that example, you have some siblings that grew up in the same household that don't listen to nothing that their parents have. So you got siblings that's like polar opposites. Like one of them is going down here doing great things and the other one is doing wrong things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody makes that decision. So if you're looking at this podcast and you're like, man, I don't got nobody that believe in me. I don't got anybody. Bruh, find that person that do. Like, there's nobody on this green earth that came from literally nothing. And if you put on that title, you are disgracing the people that believes in you and that poured into you. It could be one interaction at the grocery store. Like, you'd be like, hey, babe, I love them shoes.
Yeah.
Hey, little babe, I love your skin. Like, what in the world? What you, like, that person genuinely cared about you.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? So we can't skate over that just because our familiar place is a place of discouragement, a place of just anger and malice, right? Mm-hmm. Jealousy. We have to look for those positive things and hold our hat on it. So I appreciate you for mentioning that, just on how you were able to turn your care into a calling, because a lot of people are benefiting from some of the things that you had to just endure
yeah.
and go through. So I appreciate that. To you being a young professional, and you may have some athletes questioning their path.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like they're inside of a position where a lot of people are saying, hey, I want this for you. Like, I need you to do this. Like, I need this. What do you do, or what would you say to that person that in their deepest heart of hearts, it's like, man, this ain't me. Like, I have something that I want to do, but everybody else is telling me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell that individual to further, I mean, just go down a good path of their life?
I think we've talked a lot about community during our time on this podcast. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, there's so much power in being alone.
Mm.
And when you're alone, you can truly meet yourself and get to know yourself. And so a part of transitioning as an athlete is counseling, listening to your coaches, listening to your brand strategies. But then there is another time that is equally as important, the time that you spend alone, silencing all the voices that you've encountered and just having a one-on-one with you and God. And you ask for help and say, like, Lord, make it plain, make it simple. And you can take all of the mentorship that you've accumulated and have a conversation with yourself. I think the most brilliant people in the world talk to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to myself all day, every day. Because
do you
nobody,
answer yourself?
I do. I have real conversations with myself.
So you talk to yourself and answer?
I'm a genius.
Mm.
Geniuses talk to themselves.
Wow.
Because your first ideas are not always your great ideas. So before I have a conversation with someone that's important, or before I make an important decision, I talk myself through all of the possible scenarios and outcomes. And that way, I've had several rough drafts before I got to the final published piece. Wow. Some people don't talk to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to have a relationship with self in order to make a decisions after receiving counsel from your team.
Mm-hmm. And that's good. And in order to get to that place of self, you got to be still.
Yeah.
I had to learn that.
That's hard.
Like, man, after I got done playing ball and it was like, yeah, he ain't coming out of retirement, my boy. I'm talking about going to the gym every day, still training like I'm going after the ball, being around people, right? Like hitting the club, buying the bottles, right? You know what I'm saying? Like I want to be inside this space because it distracted me from being by myself.
Exactly.
That was and when I was by myself, I was depressed,
mm-hmm.
like fighting myself, not reasoning with myself, not uplifting myself. So it was a very tough transition for me starting off initially because until I was able to understand what everybody was telling me during those developmental stages,
mm-hmm.
like my Coach O's, you know what I'm saying? My pops, you know what I'm saying? Like Coach Nelson's, like all these people that told me that I was more than just an athlete and saw greatness in my life. It didn't register until I was able to be by myself away from distractions. And then their words started comforting me
mm-hmm.
when I didn't want to comfort myself or didn't know how to.
You know, that's good. They say the giant looks in the mirror and sees nothing.
Hmm.
And what that means to me is that even if everyone in your life is speaking affirmations onto you, when your calling or your purpose is so big, you might not be able to see it yourself.
Hmm.
And I think that's the importance of speaking life into the youth and the importance of your brand, because when that individual does grow up to start a relationship with themselves where they talk to themselves, mm-hmm. they're only going to repeat the things that they heard.
Yeah.
So if they grew up in a household with someone telling them, oh, you can cook, but you ain't Paula Deen, you know, mm-hmm. or yeah, you can run the ball fast, but you can shoot, but you ain't Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like in that time alone, that's what's going to replay yeah. in their head. And so I think the blessing that we both have had is people in our life who speak affirmations onto us. That way, when we have that alone time with ourselves, as difficult as it might be, we have a positive image in our head about ourselves.
Yeah.
And there are things that other people can see about you that you can't see in yourself. And so you have to surround yourself with people who, not yes men, people who tell you when you're right, tell you when you're wrong, Woo. But they do it with love and yeah. with the intent of affirming you that you can and you will walk into your God calling purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's good. That's good, man. I had a good time today, Kate.
Me too.
Hey, for real.
Yeah, this yeah. is just us. We sit on the phone and talk like this. I'm telling you, my brother will call yeah. me on a random Tuesday and pray for me.
Yeah.
He don't even know that I was just on my way to cuss somebody out. He don't even know that he got that spirit right clean up off me.
Yeah.
And so y'all just get a little insight or an insider scoop at conversations that we have every day because mm-hmm. we actually doing the work.
Right.
We not just here talking about it. We actually invest in the youth every mm-hmm. single day. It's not a day that goes by that one of us is not out in the community advocating for young people in yeah. their success to build a thriving community.
And you know, I'm glad you said that because you just held me accountable.
Yeah.
Like from not feeling guilty for not doing enough.
Mm.
And this is just my vulnerable moment within the podcast. It's just like, you know, sometimes you can get so caught up in like, okay, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And every opportunity that comes to you that's good, right? It may not be God. So whenever it comes to me and it's like, okay, I can reach more kids, right? I can do all these things. And one of the things that holds me accountable when I get inside those spaces and when I see familiar kids' faces.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, dang, I could have been doing something else where I could have been being obedient to God. Like doing a good thing could also be in disobedience to God. You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate you for saying that because it reminds me of how much I actually do
yeah.
inside the community because ooh, but
you do a lot. You just, yeah. like I said, you just a giant looking in the mirror and can't mm-hmm. see nothing. Yeah. Cause you bigger. You bigger than that space or that frame.
Mm.
So that's the only reason why you may feel like that. But I think we're both the oldest of three. And we saw and experienced at a young age how our younger siblings want to do everything we yeah. do, good yeah. or bad. And so I think we took that with us through life and we learned the power of influence mm-hmm. at a really young age. And like you said, you're going to see those same kids' faces over and over yeah. in the space that you're doing. And so you have to always be mindful of how you show up in the world mm-hmm. because you have the power of influence over your life.
Facts. And the parents.
Yeah.
It's like, I may not see the kids in certain things. It may be a 21 plus like yeah. event. And I see the parents.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? And I may not even have met them, but the kids, you know, they showing them my social media and stuff like that. And I be in places where it's like, hey, what's up, man? Eat your side. Like, you got, I'm like, hey. And like, with me, you're not going to know that you're a stranger to me. Mm-hmm. I don't make you feel like I know you.
I know.
But it's so many people. I'm just like, bro, I don't know
you, man. You don't even know your name, but hey, give me a hug, baby.
Throw it in, dog. I'm glad to see you, man. All right, so what's next for Our Eyes on You branding? How can the TEDx Alabaster community help, like just support what you're doing, and also the Flip the Culture brand? How can that help?
What's next for All Eyes on You branding? We will turn 9 years old mm-hmm. in August.
So you survived COVID.
We survived COVID. That's good. Yeah. I started my business in 2016, the year we graduated.
High school,
my senior year.
I did not know that.
My mama told me when you go to college, you have to have a brand. I did not know what a brand was, so yeah. I came up with something, and it would actually stick, you know, from the mouths of babes, they say. Mm-hmm. So 9 years later, I'm transitioning out of being a solopreneur And I have grown a wonderful team that you are a part of, that your family is a part of. And I've learned the power in numbers. Mm-hmm. And so what's next for All Eyes on You branding is us actually rebranding ourselves and giving ourselves a makeover so that I'm not so much of the face of the business. Because at this point in my career, I have over 80 independent contractors that I work with at any given time. And I want to share more of that story. Over the past 9 years, I've created a system that can be easily duplicated and copied and pasted to any industry or any brand. And we're a quality over quantity type of agency. We don't provide, we don't, take pride in having 20 or 30 clients.
Yeah.
We have a number of clients that we can count on one hand, and we actually have a specialized services and treatments for how we care for their brand. And so I think what's next is us showing up in numbers and showing up as a creative community.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited. I think what Flip the Culture can do to help me is continuing to nurture young athletes, because you know that there are a very small percentage of them that are going to pursue this professionally.
Right.
And so when you mentor them in the way that you do, it opens their mind for me to be able to help them.
Got you.
So when you affirm a young athlete that they can take these transferable skills to real estate, to becoming an author, to becoming a teacher, to becoming a citizen, then that allows space for me and my team to help them execute whatever their plan is they come up with. And then as far as TEDx Alabaster, congratulations.
Man, appreciate it.
Congratulations. I think you just showing up as a black man, it's so important for brown kids to see you and hear you, because they see themselves in you.
Yeah.
And I think us growing up, we didn't have a lot of examples of young black people doing positive things. Because for some reason, the powers that be in the media, they want to show us a different version of ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I think you showing up and being present on the platform TEDx Alabaster is going to just open the door in another young kid's mind once they see that on social media. So just keep showing up in the world.
A bit, man. Appreciate it, man. Y'all. Hey, wonderful show, man. We're going to see y'all next week. Flip the Culture. But the culture won't change until we do. We out of here.
Lip the Culture Anthem.